Boy, is it good to be Trevor Lawrence today. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We've got so much to do on this Friday. We've got Dan Hurley explaining himself on why he decided to go back to UConn. We've got more football stuff, but the world kind of comes to a screeching halt, Pearl, when these massive quarterback contracts get signed, because it's about the player and the person who signs it. It's about Trevor Lawrence and whether he'll ever live up to this generational talent moniker, but it's also about the other dominoes that fall as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, for Trevor, this is basically $275 million total. That's kind of like, you know, you could buy a team with that. That's a lot of money.
That's a ton of money.
Like, that's almost NBA money. Like, that's getting totally crazy.
That's sniffing six-man in the rotation NBA money.
And here, I saw on social media a lot of criticism of this deal because Trevor Lawrence's numbers came way down last year. Everyone's like, he is not elite. He's not top five. Why are you paying that $55 million? I think that you don't have to be top five to get $55 million. This is just what you pay quarterbacks now. And the because one of the things is, if you don't have Trevor Lawrence, what do you have in Jacksonville? And this is relevant to all the other, to Dak Prescott and all the other quarterback contracts. If you do not pay that big money to your quarterback, you're just stuck. You can't just start over. You end up being like the Las Vegas Raiders. So this wasn't even, there was no controversy with this deal to me.
Well, you just pointed it out. You're paying top money. He's now going to be tied with Joe Burrow for $55 million annually, and he's not a top quarterback. So you're getting to the place where, yeah, you're projecting what is he going to give us in the future. But so far, you know, last year Trevor Lawrence was definitely banged up and played through it admirably, but, you know, threw a ton of picks, had fumbles.
Yep.
It was not the natural progression of coming off of that first year with Doug Peterson, his second year, but Doug Peterson's first year. And then you're expecting, oh, you have this great comeback in a playoff game. You're hanging in a game against Kansas City in Arrowhead in the playoffs. And then the next year you're thinking, and you'll take the next step. And instead, that didn't happen. In fact, it was C.J. Stroud in his own division who came and took and had a major debut. So, you know, what are you doing? You're making your team building much harder. You're betting on the future for Lawrence, sure. But you're making your team building a lot harder, because if Lawrence isn't a top five quarterback and you're paying him like one, you've got very little margin for error for the rest of the roster.
Okay, but let's be real about what happened last year. I mean, they were on their way to winning this division. Then Trevor Lawrence really got hurt. And like, you see it in his numbers. They go from very, very good to very bad. Yep. And they lose, they lost their last five games. I know, I think, I don't, full disclosure, you picked them in the Super Bowl. It wasn't a bad pick. It wasn't a bad pick because they were on way to win that division. And the other thing, too, you watch a lot of Jaguars. I actually bet on a lot of Trevor Lawrence over-unders. I've never seen more just missed touchdowns for one team in my entire life. Mm. How many times did a wide receiver fail to get his feet down in Jacksonville? Is there a stat for that? Because Jacksonville set the all-time record.
Call PFF.
I think his receivers let him down a lot. And also, last year they had some line problems as well. So there's a lot of caveats here. It reminds me of Dak 2 years ago. Dak had terrible numbers. Remember, 23 touchdowns, 15 picks. I think he led the league in picks and only played a certain amount of games. But how many times did he hit a receiver in the chest and the ball popped up? So, of course, he was in a great place to have good numbers the next year. Trevor got screwed by his team. Like, he did not fall apart as a quarterback last year as much as people think. 2 years ago, 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, elite. Top 10 for sure. Last year, a lot went wrong with Jacksonville. I don't think it was on the quarterback. And so it gets back to, oh my God, can you imagine Jacksonville without Trevor Lawrence? They would be terrible.
Right. Okay. So we're talking about Trevor Lawrence and the contract he signs. He gets the $55 million a year, which ties Joe Burrow for the largest. It's $275 million, $142 million fully guaranteed. I want to go back to something that you've said. You did an against the grain on it earlier this week, and something that we've talked about, which is, when do we get to a tipping point with some of these contracts? And we talked about it with running backs, and now running backs don't get paid nearly what they did, or nobody gets paid like that, but like when we were kids and when we were growing up, and how running backs were the thing and they were the focal point and everyone had to make sure the running back was happy and he was probably the highest paid person on the offense. And now it's the wide receivers, non-quarterback edition.
Yeah,
now it's
absolutely
the wide receivers.
Right, right.
And they're getting crazy money.
Absolutely.
And it keeps going up and up. And you had a great against the grain. Like, get it now, wide receivers, because at some point we have so many good players coming in from college and you have a lot of supply here, then it's the demand's going to fall, and paying quarterbacks $30 million, paying wide receivers $30 million a year isn't going to make sense anymore. You do wide receiver by committee. You you know, do all those things. When are we going to get to that point with quarterbacks? And I'm not saying that Trevor Lawrence right. is going to be the tipping point. He's a good player, obviously. He's got a great pedigree. But I think about maybe the Kyler Murray contract. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Tua. We don't know what's going to happen with Dak. Are we going to get to a point where instead of like these eye-popping numbers for mm-hmm. quarterback, do you do like what your Philadelphia Eagles did, drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round? Kyle Shanahan may have stumbled onto something here with Purdy. They got so lucky that he was Mr. Irrelevant, but do you just constantly keep taking quarterbacks in the draft? Talk about supply and demand. We had six quarterbacks go in the first round this year. These dudes are good. They're seasoned, coming out of college. I wonder if we get to a point with the quarterbacks where we're going to cycle out of this these contracts that just keep going up and up and up. And
well,
up.
Let me ask you a question. First of all, you can't do quarterback by committee. So that's
no, I know. But that's a real thing. You need multiple to get through a season these days, it feels like.
I see what you're saying. But wide receiver, part of the reason you don't want to pay them is because they're so quarterback dependent, offense dependent on what's around you. So, and the defense can focus on the wide receiver. The quarterback is so much more important than the wide receiver. It's night and day.
No, I know, but we said that about running backs once upon a time, didn't we?
I don't know, maybe, but I don't really think we said that. The quarterback is so much more important than every other player on the team, and you know it. He's the only person who touches the ball, except for the center, on every play. So he affects everything. It's like they're underpaid. $55 million is underpaid for his impact on the team. Like, there's nobody who's even close to the quarterback, and there's only one way to win consistently over time in the NFL. It's quarterback.
Right.
You can't have a bad quarterback and make the playoffs okay. 8 out of 10 years. The other thing, too, you said this committee and Brock Purdy, they're about to give Brock Purdy $55 million a year. So right. eventually, if you do hit, you're going to pay him anyway. So that theory makes sense. Jalen Hurts is getting paid a ton. So even if you do find that guy, then you're going to be back in the, I paid him $50 million a year.
Yeah, you might. But I also know that teams are trying to be smart. They're trying to optimize. They're trying to do what every industry does, look for market inefficiencies, all these things. And I think if you looked at like Kyle Shanahan, and we talked about this, we argued about this for an entire season. Is it the player or is it the system?
Sure.
And I think with Brock Purdy, that was always the big thing. Is Brock really the guy who's stepping up here, or could anybody who has some talent be good in the Shanahan system? And I do think that's a question, because you're always looking to be the person who zags while everyone else is zigging, right? Aren't you always trying to be the team that's trying to find that one...
Yeah,
edge.
Like the rookie quarterback thing.
Right. And do you just try to keep that going? Like, instead of ever getting to the point where you have to pay a quarterback who's not a top five quarterback money, just keep cycling in. Get the system, get your coach in place, yeah. get your skill position players, your offensive and defensive lines as best as they can possibly be, and let the quarterback just run the system. It doesn't have to be the most elite person and athlete of all time getting $55 million a year. Rather, the system wins for you.
I love your thinking. It's very analytical. It just doesn't work like that. And Brock Purdy, made so many awesome plays last year. Like, that's not system. Because I think Kyle Shanahan is going to be stoked to pay Brock Purdy. Also, Kyle Shanahan leads what our friend Diana Rossini called the cult of Kirk, right? Kirk yeah. Cousins. Kirk Cousins is the ultimate system quarterback. He does exactly what the coaches want. Guess how much teams are lining up to give him $50 million a year. It's not that simple. Where
except for the Falcons, who drafted his replacement before he basically got in the building.
Not only were they lining up to pay him $50 million a year, they were doing it 3 weeks early before free agency started.
Yeah, we found that out yesterday. So, they were tampering. It just didn't matter.
Your logic totally makes sense, and I'm not arguing with that, but the reality is you have to pay these guys because it's not that easy to run the system. And Brock, I think you totally underestimate how good Brock Purdy is.
I'm not. I'm not underestimating. I know that Brock went from hitting singles to hitting doubles basically from year one to year two. I'm not saying that he's not a good quarterback. I'm just wondering did Kyle Shanahan stumble upon something, right? Where they traded 3 first round picks to get Trey Lance. It ended up blowing up in all of their faces. And yet here was Brock Purdy sitting in Mr. Irrelevant, even though he liked Brock. If you have any shred of liking a quarterback, just take him.
But he passed on Brock Purdy 17 million times in that draft. He was Mr. Irrelevant.
No, he had
no idea. He didn't stumble onto anything.
No, well, that
he didn't do it. It's just that was landed upon him. He might as well have been an unsigned free agent.
No. But you saw the story after the fact. The stories leading up to the Super Bowl where Kyle Shanahan says he has a conversation with the owner of the 49ers when they're talking about whether or not to get rid of Lance. And he says, if you or whether to take Purdy, because they had just traded all this draft capital to get Lance. And he says, if you have a conviction on a guy, just take him. And they said they would have taken Brock earlier, but they were wrestling with this idea about Trey Lance. You read these stories. It was all leading up to the Super Bowl.
I don't understand what you're saying here. You're saying that they were like, there's some brilliant plan to take Brock Purdy. And they said, you know what? We're gonna take a backup long snapper before him. They just got completely lucky. I hear what you're saying, but they can't take any credit for drafting Brock Purdy.
Do they
try to do that?
No, they're saying, Shanahan's saying, I felt this way. No, I'm sorry. You know what it was? It wasn't about the draft. It was about watching Brock in practice.
Yeah,
Watching Brock in practice.
Yeah, that was awesome. But they screwed up the draft on Brock Purdy.
Yes,
just
yes.
Like the Patriots famously screwed up the draft on
Tom
Brady.
Right,
and
right.
Take all the credit in the world for it. We've always laughed at that.
I know, he's going to have a statue. It was that they saw Brock being really good in practice, and they thought, can we start him over Trey Lance, even though we want to? And that was what the story was.
Right. But it's not like there was no plan. Like, there's no strategy. Okay, well, we have a veteran quarterback, Jimmy G. Their plan was, let's get Trey Lance at number 3. That was the plan. It wasn't, hey, let's wait around to the last pick of the whole draft and then find our future. There's no plan there.
I think that getting back to the Trevor Lawrence discussion and these quarterback salaries that just keep going up and up and up, and even if you're paying for a guy who at the time is not a top 5 quarterback and you're paying them top money, the point I make about Shanahan is like, yeah, did they stumble upon something? You know, where you were able to get a ton of production from the last place you thought it was coming from, right? The place you least expected it, literally Mr. Irrelevant.
Right.
Is that a teaching moment for the rest of the league where, again, you're going to try to find teams who are going to zag while everyone else is zigging? You're trying to find the market inefficiency. And it is not efficient to pay a quarterback $55 million a year when you're trying to build out a 53-man roster. It becomes so much harder for you to build a competent and competitive roster once someone's taking up that much of a slice of the pie, and especially if that person is not, like, pulling their weight.
Yeah, I mean, the counter-argument is that all the Super Bowl winners have that guy because you have Hall of Famers, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady have won all the Super Bowls, and those guys have been top-of-market guys. They've taken a little bit less.
Well,
maybe.
Brady famously took less.
Yeah, but, I mean, do you think he was cheap, though?
I don't think he was cheap, but he wasn't the top. He wasn't getting paid the top.
Right, but those guys, they were near the top. Like, they were getting gigantic chunks.
Yeah.
They were getting huge chunks of the salary cap. So, yeah, I think you can win. Now you prove it because of Mahomes, you can win by paying the quarterback. And Stafford was a huge contract. They haven't really. The ironic part is we love this rookie salary cap. I'm actually stealing this from Mike Lombardi, but none of them have actually won anything.
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, it was 11 years ago.
It was a long time ago. 855-212-4227. Brock Purdy almost got there.
Yep, almost got there.
Jalen Hurts.
How many rings you
Jalen Hurts got there, didn't win it, but that he was cheap when they got there. They paid him after you got to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's why those Jalen Hurts Eagles Super Bowl championship t-shirts are now being sold somewhere else besides America.
Yeah, they're passing them out in third world countries. 855-212-4227. Ask you this question about Trevor Lawrence. Do you think he's going to live up to this generational talent, you know, moniker, this label, generational talent? The outside gave it to him. He wasn't saying it, but considering the college, going back to the high school career, the college career, how successful he's been, the generational can't miss number one overall pick, gets paid yesterday, not a surprise. Will he ever live up to that nickname or that that expectation, rather?
Do you think he was living up to it before last year, like after they beat the Chargers in the playoffs? So do you think
he was on his way?
Yeah, it felt like he was in the process of living up to it. Then last year, I think we're going to see more of Trevor Lawrence from 2 years ago moving forward than Trevor Lawrence last year. I mean, he's one thing, if he stays healthy, he's a gigantic target out there. Feels like every time he drops back, someone's going to hit him in the shin. But if he stays healthy, yeah, I think he will hit that label.
855-212-4227. You are welcome to hang with us today. We're glad you're hanging with us today. You can watch the show if you want. YouTube.com/InfinitySportsNet. Twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. You can listen to us on the absolutely free to download Odyssey app. Also on SiriusXM channel 158 on all these incredible Infinity Sports Radio stations. Coming up, Dan Hurley taking a bit of a media tour yesterday. explaining himself. Why did he turn down the chance to coach the Lakers and LeBron James to go back to Storrs, Connecticut? 855-212-4227, Maggie Perloff.
With Wendy's $3 English muffin deal, you don't just get breakfast, you get a proper meal. Get your choice of a sausage or bacon, egg and cheese English muffin sandwich with small seasoned potatoes. Wow, that sounds really good. Grab yours today. Terms apply. The NASCAR Cup Series heads to Iowa Speedway. Kyle Larson is out for a repeat performance of a week ago when he took the checkered flag at Sonoma. This propelled him into the lead in points in the Cup Series. A three-way tie for wins with Denny Hamlin and William Byron. Man, I mean, you guys might not know this about me.
What's up?
Gigantic English muffin fan.
Oh, I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Nooks and crannies.
I do love an English muffin.
Oh, English muffin is a very underrated style of bread. If I don't know what you call it, or style of muffin. It's not really a muffin.
It's a roll.
A roll.
It's a better roll than a roll.
So why don't they call it an English roll?
I don't know what they're doing over there across the pond. They're messing it up.
English muffin, though, we know what it is. But why is it a roll and not a bread? What's the difference between it and bread?
I don't like nooks, but I like crannies.
Nooks, you're a crannies guy.
Big crannies fan.
Yeah. I feel like it's... I've
known that about you for a while, actually.
I don't feel like it's a roll, actually. Like, a roll is something specific. That's not a roll. Is an English muffin a roll?
It's closer to a roll than a muffin.
But is it closer to a piece of bread than a roll? Jesus. Good Friday topic.
Stand by.
What are you Googling it? Who can answer this? The internet? AI?
ChatGPT.
I think we all can just...
Ask ChatGPT. Is English muffin closer to a roll? You might break AI.
I'm with you, though. I love them. I sit here. I eat them a lot. I'm like 3 days a week on an English muffin.
Peanut butter and jelly on an English muffin?
I usually put cream cheese and jelly on it. Actually, okay. Can we talk about this? I'm glad because you brought the Wendy's thing up, and I actually do want to eat that today. Maybe we should order it. But I'm having trouble with this shift, figuring out what to bring from home to eat for breakfast. Because we can't order out every day.
Don't you eat it? You don't eat at home? Oh, no, you definitely don't eat
at home. I can't eat at home. When I wake up, I'm not hungry right away.
Right.
Why'd you laugh at that, Pete?
There's no rules to that now. But when you work this shift... Bring anything.
Yeah, I literally just had a Hot Pocket as soon as I woke up.
Like a breakfast one or just like
no,
a pizza?
A straight up pepperoni pizza one.
Yeah, I get it.
So Carlos is high. That's one thing to know about today's show.
I know. It's like, what is appropriate when you work this shift? Because the only thing I can come up with is I eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which Perloff makes fun of me about, and also cream cheese and jelly. I don't know what else to do. I'm not going to make eggs and bring them in that early. I don't have that kind of time.
I'm a big oatmeal guy, and you can make oatmeal work. I mean, that's sort of my go-to.
How am I going to carry it in?
Just take a little bag, and then you bring a bowl, and then you put a little water in and put it in the microwave. Bang, you got oatmeal.
Oh, here. You mean make it here. Oh, I thought you meant make it at home and somehow transport it.
Is that totally lame, the dude making oatmeal in the pantry? Is that all?
I've done it.
It's better than other things you could be making in there. Like when we make the tuna jello, that's going to be a terrible day.
That's bad. I think oatmeal at work is the way to go.
I think you should bring flan.
Yeah. Well, I'll be sick the whole time. You guys know I don't like that.
Dinner the other day, someone ordered creme brulee, and I'm like, oh, thank God Maggie's not here.
Gagging. I don't like the texture of that. You're right.
But also, too, like, it's really what you eat, it does not matter. It's just the constant... intake of coffee is the most important thing here.
No,
you don't want anything to get in the way of the coffee.
I don't. Well, you never eat here. What's your secret?
I don't like to eat unhealthy foods in the morning. So I wake up and I immediately start the water and I start the coffee and I do my oatmeal with almonds on top and soy milk.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, it's
you got a hell of a morning.
I eat the same thing every day, every meal.
That sounds boring.
Yeah, I'm a boring eater. It's actually pretty good.
Good to be boring or... what you're eating.
What I'm eating. It's better than a Hot Pocket with pepperoni pizza.
Now, is it though?
Fair.
Is it?
No, I mean, just health-wise. But, and then I eat a chicken sandwich every day or a tuna sandwich every day for lunch.
Is that
so sad?
It's actually, I agree with it. You don't want a giant belly bomb right away at like 3 a.m. in the morning.
No, you'll be in a coma. It just doesn't work.
You'll be sleeping under the console.
So I've gone different ways about this. I ate the same thing every day for lunch for 4 years in high school.
Yeah.
And it's not a great way to live. But you get into like a rut.
Pretty much everybody I know does the same thing. Most people I know eat the same thing for lunch every day.
Can we put that as a poll question? Do you eat the same thing for lunch every day? Like almost every day?
And the thing is, since the pandemic, I don't think anyone goes into the office, so you don't have to really buy stuff in the neighborhood or whatever.
Sure.
So I think that a lot of people are probably into habits. Like, once you like a food, why not just go with it all the time? It's super weak. I dinner, then I'll go off the chart.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're painting outside the lines.
I might have fajitas. I might have a tuna casserole. You do not know what's going to happen with Andrew Pearl off at dinner.
Wait,
it's
if you're
wild.
Eating a tuna fish sandwich for lunch and then tuna casserole, do you realize how much mercury must be in your body right now? You're radioactive.
I don't know why I say tuna casserole. That's what my mom made every night growing
up.
Glow. I haven't had tuna casserole.
And that third eye is really coming in.
Like a Simpsons fish.
Yeah. I haven't had tuna casserole since 1985. I don't know where that came from.
Like, kudos to your daughters. They're all in on tuna.
Tuna casserole is a great food. I've not seen that in a while.
It's old school, man. That's like out of some kind of Betty Crocker cookbook or something.
Yeah, do kids grow up with tuna casserole anymore? I don't know if you had it. My mom, she would whip up a tuna casserole pretty much three nights a week. Then Hamburger Helper was also.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
We did not do that. We did this thing, tuna and peas, my mom used to make every once in a while.
That's related.
That's when I knew that, like, someone had to really go to the store.
But your mom's you came from a family that ran a restaurant.
Yeah.
So did your parents want to cook for you?
We ate out five nights a week. At
you
other
ate
places.
Out. What kind of kid eats out?
We ate out every night because my parents don't want to cook anymore.
So my kids will not eat when they were, you know, between 1 and 10. They're now 12 and 13. They would not eat anything that wasn't made at home. Like, they couldn't eat out. Like,
brutal. Like, you live in New York City. That's rough.
What do you think?
There's a restaurant every 5 feet.
A five-year-old's not going to eat sushi. What are you talking about? They only eat mac and cheese. And
they serve that at restaurants.
Dinosaur-shaped chicken tenders.
Yeah,
they do, but they make it. They always put some flair in it. And my daughters
that's not
are like,
fly.
No. They're like, is this paprika? I'm out.
No, I eat out every night.
That is unusual.
Yeah. Parents don't want to cook. Totally get it. And if you would open up our fridge at home, it was like all condiments. It was just like, it was like a frat house, but not. And
five jars of pickles.
Exactly. But then I'd go to the restaurant and I'd be like, I'm hungry. They're like, well, go into the cooler and get yourself something. I'm like, well, I'm not going to cook a tenderloin. Everything's in bulk. What am I supposed to do? I just want a sandwich.
I also think, I'm going to call you out here, some inconsistencies.
Okay.
Sometimes you will say, oh, this food is unhealthy for my child. And once in a while you're like, I love to get, you said organic bananas. And then I hear about the rest of Lucas's diet. I'm like, is Maggie doing the Diet Coke with a Big Mac here with her son?
Yeah.
Like, it's impossible.
Some version.
If you want to be like, we had like a week where like, let's go organic. And then just like the reality of raising a child is that you're going to have to sacrifice that child's health.
Well, this was the ultimate irony is I made him a grilled cheese the other day. And it's organic American cheese.
Like, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I'm the sucker that will still buy it.
Oh.
And, you know, I try to get the victories where I can. My kid's just addicted to sugar. Like, he'll rob a bank for a freaking lollipop.
You just told me that there was something, a very popular snack that I won't say is like, oh, that's got some bad ingredients. It's like the healthiest thing my kids eat.
I'm telling you, you want to know what changed. And this is not just for people with kids. This is everybody. I got this app where you scan the barcode.
Yes, I've heard of those.
And it's great and it will ruin your life all at the same time.
Oh,
so
no.
Handle with care. And it gives every single food that has a barcode a grade. And some of the things, like, listen, you buy ice cream, it's going to have a low grade because it's got sugar in it. Obviously, you know that you're buying ice cream. But some of the snacks and some of the foods have like toxic things in it. And that stuff I want to know about.
What if the guy was a wacko that's giving these grades out?
It's not like one. That's funny.
It's one guy walking around with an axe to grind to get the food company.
I can't stand goldfish.
Yeah, it's like I'm taking on Oreo cookies. Like, guy's got something against Nabisco. No, it's like a health food. It's not one person. I don't think. It's
probably
a committee.
There's probably some guy that has a vendetta.
It's funny. It's called Bill's List, but I don't know
Bill. It's Bill walking around.
Being like, bleep you, bleep you,
yeah,
bleep you.
A great example of technology making everybody's life worse.
Bill.
Basically poison everything that's in the grocery store. So that's kind of ruined my life.
Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe a lot of, you know, Big Brother things, but that one I believe wholeheartedly.
We just don't have a lot of, listen, it's just different. Our lifestyles are different in this country, you know, for the most part. Like, we need things quick. We need things easy. Yeah. Would we all love to live in a fishing village in Spain or Italy and be buying our stuff every day from the market? You know, maybe that's a fantasy, but it's just not reality for a lot of people's day to day.
Well, but convenience doesn't need to have toxins in in your food.
Oh, totally.
Like, there's just
there
we
should
don't,
be some more oversight.
Yeah,
on this
we
stuff.
don't make things as well as we could.
Yes.
And still
to
maintain convenience.
Yeah, because yes. everything's because we're in capitalism here.
Well, I once went, oh, I'm going to get farmer's market stuff. Have you ever had a farmer's market kick? So I went down to the farmer's market, this one, a few blocks, and I was like, I got two nectarines for $14. I'm like, I'm out on the farmer's market. I'm like, and you need cash? I'm like, this is a $7 nectarine. This better be the best nectarine I've ever tasted in my life.
Turn a nectarine into a steak.
Yeah, exactly. Like $14. I'm like, wait, two nectarines? Yeah, farmer's market. It's too expensive to eat farm to table. I love that context. We were talking about, there was a former baseball player, we're doing characters, Spaceman Lee. He only eats within 50 miles, and it's, like, impossible.
Well, because he lives in the middle of nowhere in Massachusetts.
Yeah, but what's he eat in the winter? There's nothing growing in Massachusetts.
He's probably canning his own fruit.
He's hibernating.
Yeah, he's definitely canning. Yeah, and all my...
Also, all the beer kind of, you know, balances that out with that healthy diet. Bill Lee's got his own beer, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. But this it does make perfect sense. And then there's a Netflix special on the Mediterranean diet and how you'll live to 102.
Yeah.
Do we want that?
You'll be bankrupt. I mean, you're going to eat what fresh salmon every day and all these expensive olive oils.
Like olive oil. Yeah, olive oil that you actually crush the olives yourself. I mean, I just don't have time to crush olives.
I mean, I have gigantic feet, so it's easier for me.
Yeah,
you we all know in, that.
Don't even know I'm doing it.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, it just happened.
You know what those bad boys would be worth in Sicily? Oh, my God.
Every time there's a tectonic plate shift, just know that I was crushing olive oil.
You could be the Wemby of...
Yeah, right.
You know that famous scene where Lucille Ball is crushing grapes
in
the thing?
Like, I know. It's my inspiration for life.
Yeah, I don't know. They could have said, all right, take a break. Maggie, go in there and crush all the grapes, and then Lucille gets back in, and we have wine.
I'm her stunt double.
Four steps, and that whole thing is done.
The scene's over. Yeah, all right. We'll get to Danny Hurley in just a moment. He was on a big media blitz yesterday and explaining his rationale, but did all of it add up, Coach? Get to that in a minute. Bogus is here. He's got headlines. Hi.
Good morning, everybody. Calling all boobs in Edmonton. We need all shirts up in the air right now.
Yeah, almost like lost it. Got it back across to an open Forsling. A shot tip. And they score with Sam Reinhart cruising to the front of the net. That one deflects home. And the Panthers strike first with 1:02 to go here in the opening frame. It's 1-0.
Doug Plagans on Panthers Radio. Sam Reinhart starting the scoring in game 3 of the Stanley Cup final in Edmonton. It was after this that ESPN cameras cut to another female Oilers fan. She did not flash anybody, but she was gleefully celebrating the Panthers scoring for some reason, and no one told her to sit down in her section. Florida would build a four. Did you guys see this?
No. What happened?
The Panthers score.
Yeah.
They show ESPN cameras on the guys huddling, celebrating behind the net, and they cut to a lady in an Oilers jersey. She's got like blue and orange beads on, and she is on her feet
cheering.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for the Panthers, the other team scoring, and like people are sitting around her looking at her, but like no one grabs her and sits her down. She's all in for what. I don't know if she's confused, high, drunk,
yes,
all of those
yes,
things.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wait, what period was this?
The first period.
Well,
19 minutes in.
As we found out from Kate with the rack that she was, what, 8 Trulies in?
Mm.
First period?
Well, she said one period, I think. I don't know if it was the first, but she said a period.
I think people are pre-gaming for these hockey games like in an epic way, like LSU football style.
But she thought that that Connor McDavid scored, and he did not. Again, speaking of him, here he is, still scoreless through 3 games.
But obviously, you got to have a lot of respect for what he's doing, how he's playing. And at the same time, I think... You know, I can only speak for myself, but there's looks there, and you got to bear down, and you got to put it in the net.
McDavid talking about Panthers goalie Sergei Bobrovsky, 32 more saves for him, a bunch of really good ones late as Florida held on. They were up 4-1. They won 4-3. They have a 3-0 lead now in this series. It appears that Canada's last Stanley Cup will remain Montreal in 93, game 4 in Edmonton tomorrow night. So far, it's a good week for Rory McIlroy. No divorce and a share of the round one lead of the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. No bogeys yesterday for Rory, but also birdies hard to come by until 2 in his final 3 holes.
I could have got a little impatient, but I felt like my patience was rewarded there with, you know, birdies, in 2 of the last 3 holes. So, yeah, it was really nice to finish like that.
Patrick Cantlay also shot 5-under yesterday. Only 15 golfers broke par in round one, not including Scottie Scheffler, Brooks Koepka, or Tiger Woods, a 4-over-74 for him. The Miami Dolphins reportedly signing veteran defensive end Calais Campbell in their latest effort to ensure their pass rush. Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips still recovering from season-ending leg injuries a year ago. The Texas Rangers took their rubber game at Dodger Stadium 3-1. The White Sox avoid a four-game sweep in Seattle with a 3-2 win in 10. And Arizona thumped Anaheim 11-1, a grand slam for Jock Peterson. Dallas's WNBA team isn't doing well these days either. The Wings now on a six-game skid after a 92-84 home loss to the Seattle Storm. They got 21 points and 6 assists from Skylar Diggins-Smith. And in honor of EJ's return Monday, a new clip of NBA players talking smack. He loves those. This one's playful, though. It's Jalen Brunson on Taylor Rooks' show. She asked Jalen if his Villanova buddy Mikal Bridges really does call him Domian Lillard because it's the size of his head. Brunson said yes, then said Bridges looks like E.T., and then close with this.
And Mikal's still in the net, so.
Yeah.
that's enough roasting that we need anyway.
Sorry, so. Mikal.
Ouch.
Oof.
What's worse, being called out for just being on the Nets or looking like E.T.?
Meanwhile,
not his
E.T.
choice. He was traded to the Nets. It's not like he signed there like Durant and Kyrie, where they're just like,
yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, I'd rather look like E.T.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather be in the NBA if I look like E.T.
I was just thinking, I wonder what his contract is. I'll bet it's pretty.
Yeah.
He's gotten paid, right?
Yeah, and he's going to get paid again soon, I think.
Oof. I'll take the Nets.
I'm sure the Suns wish they had him.
Yeah, no, I'm sure a lot of teams want to have him, but still, as bad as it is being a Net, man, he gets paid.
I love it, too, because we're going to talk more about Dan Hurley in a moment. But, you know, he spurns the Lakers, but, you know, he still wants, eventually, you know, he's not closing the door on coaching in the NBA at some point. So, like, oh, well, which job's going to open up soon? It's like, well, the Nets job's going to open. It's like, right. So that's a better job than, even with all the Lakers BS, the Nets job, and Bogus, you do a great job when you call their games. This is not about you. The broadcast is stellar.
It was two games. You don't need to put that caveat in there.
It's awesome, but it's not like the Nets job is this amazing job, like you're sitting on the throne when you are coaching the Nets.
Yeah, but would you rather, if you're a college coach, you might say, oh, this is a blank slate, I can build whatever team I want, where the Lakers are set into all these different contracts and older players. So you could at least make the argument, hey, you know, let's start at nothing.
Yeah, but you have a general manager who's making those decisions, not you. Unless you somehow work out some, like, big deal where you get to be, you know, GM.
Yeah, I would think that you need a lot of influence. But even so, the Nets, ironically, have this blank slate, but they don't have a ton of cap space or have a lot of draft picks, right?
They also just hired a brand new head coach who hasn't coached a game yet.
Yeah,
so I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves in that Jordy Fernandez is not going to keep Dan Hurley away from Brooklyn. We don't know that that's not going to work.
Listen, I didn't think Joe Mazzulla would be sitting here on the doorstep of a championship, so...
No, Dan Hurley's going to be the Knicks coach when Tom Thibodeau implodes.
When he burns
literally
everyone out.
Explodes.
When he just in a ball of energy. Yeah.
It does feel like, not to make this jump on the Hurley, but it does feel like his family only wants a Knicks job, right? Is there another job?
Yeah, let's also talk about that. I know the Lakers have a level of dysfunction and the Knicks are better now, but let's not pretend like the Knicks are this well-oiled machine.
Mm. Absolutely. What about Washington? That's on the East Coast. It's not good.
Ooh, that
not
might be the worst job in the NBA.
It's correct. Either Knicks or Boston.
Yeah.
Boston's coach just bought himself, 5 years?
Well, who knows these days.
I think he's done a good job in the series. Himself,
they're about to sweep the NBA Finals.
Yeah, but NBA champions
two games total.
Right.
People are very, very quick with the trigger on coaches.
That is. What about Nick Nurse in Philadelphia? Seems to be well liked. That
yeah, because
guy.
Philly's also. There's nothing wonky ever happens there.
But they kept Brett Brown for 11 years.
Because they were literally trying to lose.
Yeah, but then
he was cool with it.
Yeah, but then they kept that forever. Like
team.
Also, like Nick Nurse is like, I'm sorry, like he's a good coach. Like, and Tom Thibodeau is a good coach. I don't know where Bobby Hurley's a good coach. I guarantee. I tell Maggie this.
Dan Hurley.
He's going to get a $150 million contract next year. It's the money. It's always the money.
Well,
and his wife loves these bags, apparently.
We'll get
just
into
throw
that.
Money at him, and he will find a home.
Well, I love bags of money.
Yeah, like Mikal Bridges, yeah, he's a Net, but he is actually lighting cigars with $20 bills right now.
Yeah, E.T. or not. Okay, we will get into Dan Hurley. We do have some sound for you because he did do a media tour yesterday. He did talk about, was it the money? Spoiler, it's always about the money. 855-212-4227.
Calling all boobs. Calling all boobs.
You know, I'm not used to when Carlos is here. Generally, there's a theme on our rejoin music. So it's a disconnect for me to see you here, but I'm trying to figure out the theme. I'm like, no, there's no theme.
It's a disconnect for me to see Pete here. I'm always here for him.
Right. Well, we got the A-team here today. Carlos is in, EJ's still in Europe, and of course, Pete doing a fantastic job. All right, let's get to Danny Hurley. So Perloff, yesterday, he goes on a media tour, really trying to explain his side of the story and why he decided that he wanted to return to UConn instead of going to the Lakers. Basically said he was torn up over the decision, like really, really brutal decision, to the point where his wife was mad at him when he got the Lakers offer, or when this thing started to become more real, because their lives finally were perfect. Here's Hurley on the Le Batard show.
She got in, she was like crying in the beginning. I think initially that the first couple days of it, she got violently angry and emotional. Like, not like hitting me and stuff. not like, you know, get away from me. I don't want to consider this. You're torturing me with this incredible opportunity, you horrible human being. she got emotional, like, I can't believe you're bringing this. Our life is so great. It's perfect. Like our lives couldn't be better, and now you're bringing me. So she was bad in the beginning, but then she warmed up to it when we got out there and she met Rob and she met Jeannie and felt the weather, and we drove around Manhattan Beach and just met the people, though, mostly, and she saw the vision of it. She was into it. But then when we got back to Connecticut, you know, without having made a decision, and we got back home, we both flipped back.
All right, so that was Dan Hurley on Le Batard show explaining everything. Now, it is crazy on the outside to think, like, this is the moment people dream of when you're at the top of your profession, right? That you're valued so much, not just by your current employer, because we found out that Dan Hurley already had a contract in place with UConn. That was information that was not out until yesterday, before the Lakers came calling. And to have another, like a competitor, if you will, like the Lakers and UConn aren't really competitors, but like someone else who wants you, and that place is also an all-time place where you would be stepping into, you know, if you're a coach following in the likes of Pat Riley and Phil Jackson, has to be super appealing. People only dream of that in their career, and he describes this as agony.
Well, yes, but he loves his current job, so I understand that agony. Like, if I had two jobs, one that I'm so happy at, I get that. I don't know if that Lakers job is what you're describing right now. Is that a dream job? You're taking over for Darvin Ham and Frank Vogel. It's not like you're...
Well, Frank Vogel's a champion, but yeah.
Oh, come on. Yeah, I mean, that is as low a Q rating as you get on a coach. Taking over. Frank Vogel was, oh man, we can't get the guy we want. Let's get Frank Vogel. Darvin Ham was even worse. And I feel like the Lakers just, they're like, you know, before Pete Carroll, USC would never pay their coaches. They basically said, we're not investing in coach. And there's certain teams that just don't want to invest in coach. I feel like that's where the Lakers are. And he said Manhattan Beach. And, you know, we joked about, Pete was saying that he'd live in San Bernardino. I tell you right now, 6 years, $70 million is not getting any nice in Manhattan Beach.
Your $70 million doesn't stretch as much. That money will go fast.
So I think the money is where the prestige comes. And I just don't think, like, that history really, he said it to be nice. I don't think the history is a draw for the Lakers. You think that would be like the prestige? Is it really there?
Well, let's talk about the money, because isn't it always about the money?
Always.
Hurley,
it's all that matters,
was asked if there is a number that it would take for him to leave UConn.
To leave, there probably is, you know, to leave a place at any moment in your life. I think that to say that it's not a motivating factor, the finances to leave a place is definitely a thing. to stay at a place, I don't think it's ever going to be a thing. Like to stay somewhere like UConn, if there wasn't, it would never have been, I think, a financial thing. Like, again, this wasn't like some like pressure tactic to make me the highest paid college coach. Like that was already done. But to leave a place, I mean, yeah, you know, to leave all that behind, there probably is a number. I don't know what that is.
Okay, so just attention all NBA franchises who may want Dan Hurley in the future. 70 mil's not going to get it done, and yeah. You're going to have to come correct with the money a little bit bigger for Dan Hurley.
Well, I think in reality, I think he'll be the highest paid coach next offseason, not the sixth highest paid coach.
And that's in the NBA, you're saying?
In the NBA, and sixth highest paid coach in, I know this is, people hate this, in a high tax state, which isn't really worth the same thing as being the sixth highest coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. So I do think there'll be more money in the future. And honestly, Dan Hurley, by saying no to this job, has actually increased his value on the market. Now he's like the ungettable Dan Hurley. So he's definitely going to cash in out of this whole thing.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though, about Dan Hurley was very upset that anyone dared to think that this was a leverage play. Right. Called it lazy, thought that this is like, it was basically, he seemed insulted, you know, that it was preposterous that this could ever be used as a leverage play.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, I would just like, with all due respect, to point out to the coach that he did admit yesterday on the Levitard show that while his salary was not something he was trying to get leverage on, there are still things that he wants from UConn. Let's hear it. Cut one.
One of the worst takes I've heard is like, this was a leverage play by me to improve my situation at UConn. Like, I don't need leverage here. We've won back-to-back national championships, you know, at this place. And this was never a leverage situation for me. I've had a contract in place here, you know, for a couple of weeks, but the sense or the idea that this was some conspiracy to get me a sweeter deal at UConn is just, it's lazy.
Okay, so in that clip, though, he says there are still things that I want, right? He admitted to Lebatard, NIL, staff salaries, different things that I want adjusted that I'm still not comfortable with. And the governor of Connecticut just came out and said, there's a way to get him that money. He literally laid out for UConn where the money is. It's in something called the American Rescue Plan Act, which is increases in terms of state aid for UConn. And the governor just basically co-signed, you can use that for Dan Hurley. So to say that it wasn't about his salary, okay, but let's not split hairs here. There's still things he wanted that he is likely going to get now because he turned down the Laker job. That's leverage. That's using your leverage.
Okay, well, do you believe him that it wasn't? Here, forget all that. Like, do you think he's telling? He's a college basketball coach. They lie for a living.
Yeah.
So do you think he's telling the truth?
I do not. I think that he was using this for leverage. Now, I think
lazy.
Yeah, right. I know. I think it's actually lazier to just think, he was torn on the decision and came back. It's more thought out, actually, to think of what someone's motivation is and what do they have to gain from this. And let's not act like he doesn't have something to gain. You just mentioned he'll be a more sought-after coach and probably get a bigger contract just by turning the Lakers down. He will get more NIL, and his staff will get paid more because he just dangled, you know, he just played one off the other. Whether he meant to do that, whatever, but that's the consequence. He did have the leverage, and even if I think he's trying to play this right by the book. I didn't use this for my salary, but let's not pretend like you can't use it to get something done. It's called leverage.
You know, I don't even think he's telling the truth about his salary.
Right. Yeah. Why would he come out and be like, you know what, you're right, guys. It was a leverage play. I nailed it.
I'm going to defend you here. Like, to call that the worst take, I'm like, whoa, that's a strong, strong words for somebody that has no truth to it. Like, he could say, that is not what happened. But call it the worst take, ooh, he's super sensitive about this topic. Something's going on there.
Well, doth protest too much.
Definitely. But then again, you did the all due respect. I'm like, ooh, Maggie's about to show no respect to Dan Hurley right now.
Listen, I live in New Jersey. I know how this works. You lash out at people when they're getting close to the truth.